And I just wanted to share a few thoughts, because I want you to be blessed like I was blessed. And I want you to whoop and shout and know that you can trust God, that he'll never ever let you down. Some of you will probably know the story of Esther, and I'm joining it at Esther chapter 3. In the previous two chapters, it talks about how Esther and her cousin, Esther was an orphan, and she was raised by her cousin Mordecai. Mordecai was much older than her, and they were both born in exile. They were born at a time when the Jews had been taken into captivity by the Babylonians. And in the previous chapter, King Ahasuerus, he had set a feast, and there's lots of things we could pull out of the first two chapters, but we won't. But he set a feast, and in the during the feast, in the merrymaking, he decided he wanted to show off the queen, Queen Vashti. And so he sent the Queen Vashti to come to the feast, and she refused to come. And as a result, he deposed her and decided he wanted a queen who would obey him, who would work with him and not against him. And so this was God's opportunity to raise Esther into a seat of prominence and authority. And by a course of events, with God at the helm, Esther was made queen in place of Vashti. And she was raised up to a very influential position. Just a bit about Ahasuerus. In my Bible, it tells me that Ahasuerus was, his kingdom was more than 600,000 square miles. And his kingdom was from Greece in the west, right across, and I did find a map and now I can't. It was in the west, it started at Greece. In the east, it finished at India. In the north, it was from the south of Russia. And in the south, it went down to Saudi Arabia and all that area right to the coast. So he had a massive area that he ruled, and it was 600,000 square miles. Esther, the way she came to the throne is a beautiful story. It's a rags-to-riches story, isn't it? And I love it. God gave her just great favour, and the king was totally besotted by her, and there was no one else in his eyes who should be queen, and so she was made queen. But Esther was a Jew, a Jewess, but King Ahasuerus was not aware of that at the time, that he chose her to be queen. In chapter 3 we see Haman. Now Haman was extremely wicked, and he was out to kill God's people, and he set his target on Mordecai. Now Mordecai, Esther's cousin, he served God, and there was no way that he was ever going to bow down to any foreign god. And Haman thought himself very important, and he'd issued a decree with the king's seal on it, and it didn't seem a very difficult thing to get the king's seal. Just sweeten him up and he'd put his seal to anything. And Haman, every time Haman passed by anyone, they had to bow to the floor to do obeisance to him. They had to acknowledge that he was very important. But you know, Mordecai would not bow down to Haman. And when I read this, Haman just smacks at the devil all the way through. And the devil is just like Haman. He wants you to bow down to everything he throws at you. And we're God's children, and we should know better than to bow down to the enemy and whatever he throws at us. And if we read in chapter 3 and verse 2, all the king's servants, it's Esther chapter 3 and verse 2. And all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and did obeisance to Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai didn't bow nor do obeisance. Then the king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" When they spoke to him day after day and he wouldn't listen to them, they told Haman in order to see whether Mordecai's words would avail, for he had told them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai didn't bow to him or do obeisance to him, Haman was infuriated, but he thought it beneath him to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So having been told who Mordecai's people were, Haman plotted to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. Haman's downfall was his pride. There's somebody else who had pride as the downfall. In Ezekiel chapter 27, we read about the devil's downfall. Or I think it's Ezekiel 28, sorry. In Ezekiel chapter 28, we'll go from verse 11. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, "Son of man, take up a lamentation over the king of Tyre, and say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, you are the full measure and pattern of exactness, giving the finishing touch to all that constitutes completeness, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the carnelian, topaz, jasper, chrysolite, beryl, onyx, sapphire, carbuncle and emerald. And your setting and sockets and engravings were wrought in gold. On the day that you created, they were prepared. You were the anointed cherub that covers with overshadowing wings, and I set you so. You were upon the holy mountain of God. You walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created until iniquity and guilt were found in you. Through the abundance of your commerce, you were filled with lawlessness and violence, and you sinned. Therefore I cast you out as a profane thing from the mountain of God. And the guardian cherub drove you out from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was proud and lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. I cast you to the ground. I lay you before kings that they might gaze at you." That was the devil in heaven. And his downfall was his pride. And it was the same with Haman. He was a very proud character, and he wanted everyone to know how important he was. And he set himself against Mordecai, but he went a bridge too far. He decided he was going to take all the Jewish people. And at that point, he set himself against God. Now, you know, the devil will come to us like Haman did, and he'll say, "You bow down. I've brought adversity against you. Now you bow down to this adversity. Circumstances are totally against you. You will never arise above these circumstances. You will never get above it. This is your lot in life. You're going to be this way for the rest of your life. Bow down." It infuriates me to even say that. There's something inside of me that yells, "Get out of my face. I'm not having what you put on me." God has put something in me that says no, no, no to what the devil wants. I'm having what God has for me. God has a destiny with a hope and a future for me. He has a good destiny for me, and I'm not bowing down to the devil's tricks. He brings injustice against you. He'll bring rejection against you. He'll bring fear. He'll bring poverty. He'll bring pain. Are we going to bow down to what the devil throws at us. I look at Haman and I think of the devil and I think, no, no, God has given me a better future. I'm into the kingdom. You know, Esther and Mordecai were born into exile. And that's very much like us. We're born into this earth, into exile. We're all born as sinners, aren't we? We're all born in the devil's kingdom. But God has redeemed us. Jesus came and died for us. And he took us out of that exile. And he placed us into a kingdom of kings and priests. He gave us a life worth living. He gave us a hope. He gave us a future. He gave us everything that we could possibly need. And you know, I want us to realise this afternoon that whatever plot the devil sets against you, whatever circumstances he brings against you, you don't have to accept it. God has made a way of escape. And we will only succeed if we follow God's plan, God's way, and not take it into our own hands. Mordecai, the only thing he refused to do was bow down, and that's what we have to refuse to do, to bow down to what the devil throws at us. And if we do that, that's God, all God asks of us, to trust him, and he will vindicate. There's a few interesting points in verse 7 of chapter 3 of Esther. It says, in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus. The 12th year, that's interesting. The 12th year was 12 is the number of divine government in God's economy. And King Ahasuerus was there by divine appointment. They cast poor, or I don't know quite how you pronounce it, it's P-U-R, pure, poor. Anyway, it means the lot. So they cast lots before Haman for the day and the month when they would exterminate the Jews. And the lot fell on the 13th day of the 12th month. 13 is the number of rebellion. That's the act that they were going to do. They were rebelling against God. The 12th month, as we said, is divine government. They were acting in rebellion against God's government. And it was 11 months into the future that this was going to happen. And 11 is the number of disorder. I tell you, God's got it all written down in the numbers. They're all there. If you want to follow God's plan, it was planned way before Haman was born. It was planned at the foundation of the earth. But this is how great our God is. Haman went to the king. And he said to King Ahasuerus, we're now in verse 8. There's a certain people, it's how you tell the king something, isn't it? How you get his favour. There's a certain people scattered and separated among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people. And they don't keep the king's laws. Ooh, I'll gain his favour. So that it is not appropriate for the king to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued for their destruction. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business, so that they may put it into the king's treasury. He was going to buy the king's favour. He was going to buy his way through to destroy and exterminate the Jews. It was a fabulous sum for an assassin. Do you know how much it is in today, the equivalent in today's money? It's £6 million he paid to King Ahasuerus for the pleasure of exterminating the Jews. He was a fabulously rich man, was he not? I mean, when I heard about what Hillary Clinton paid out of her back pocket to try and win the elections over there, I thought that was an astounding amount of money. She put about $2 million in, didn't she? Something like that. And more. $11 million she put in. Nearly. Here he is. He's put 60. 60. Did I say 60? Sorry. £60 million he put into the treasury. It was $120 million, which is about £60 million. Sorry. So that was a fantastic amount of money. He was so incensed at getting rid of the Jewish people. As we know, Esther was unaware of all this. She did not know the troubles and the challenge that Mordecai was going through. And when Mordecai heard of the king's decree that his people were to be exterminated, he went into sackcloth and ashes, and that was something he was not allowed to do and appear at the king's gate. But he was so troubled in spirit, and so that's what he did. And word got to Esther of this, and so she sent word to Haman to Mordecai to ask him what the problem was, and he sent messages back to tell her. And in verse 12 of chapter 4, when they told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Don't think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another quarter. But you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you've come to royal dignity for such a time as this." Mordecai was not looking to Esther for deliverance. He may well have believed she was put there for that purpose. And she had a choice. And he said to Esther, you can use your influence and let God work through this. It may well be that you have come to the kingdom and to the throne for such a time as this. But if you don't, my confidence, I'm not looking to man, I'm looking to God. My confidence is in God, because I know if you won't do it, God will bring deliverance from another quarter. God is not limited to you. He will have a plan and he will rescue us. And you can choose whether you're part of that plan or not. I want to be part of God's plan. I really do. I want all that God's got for me, and I want to reach out to those who God has appointed me to the kingdom for such a time as this. I want to fulfill my destiny and my purpose in the plan that God has got. So in verse 15, Esther said to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, day or night. And I and my maids will fast as you do. After that I'll go to the king, though it's against the law, and if I perish, I perish." Esther had resigned herself to going God's way, no matter what the cost. And God vindicated her, as we know. Esther put God first, and she set them to a 3-day fast and prayer before she went before the king. How important is fasting and praying? It really is. Our prayers are the most important thing we can give anybody. They're powerful. And this prepared the ground for Esther. And we know that when Esther went to the king, she was accepted by him. And in chapter 5, verse 1, "On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, opposite the king's hall. The king was sitting on his royal throne inside the palace, opposite the entrance. As soon as the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won his favour. And he held out his hand to her, the golden sceptre, and he held out to her the golden sceptre that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the top of the king's sceptre, and the king said to her, 'What is it, Queen Esther? What's your request? It shall be given to you, even to the half of my kingdom.' Then Esther said, 'If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to a banquet that I have prepared for the king.'" there's another lesson here. And I often wonder why Esther hesitated so much. I'd have been in there like a shot and saying, do you know what's happening? Do you know, King, who's planning against us? That wicked Haman. But she didn't. She didn't adopt a human natural approach to this. And there's a spiritual principle here. Esther feasted with the king first. Then she blessed her enemies. And then she got the king to plead her cause. You know, so often we have problems facing us and they're right here. And we go into prayer and all we can do is pray, God help me, God help me, God help me. Well, I've got news for all of us. God does want to help you. And he saw that plan that was against you before even you arrived there. God had a plan to deliver you from that situation. He's totally aware of every move the devil makes against you. So don't think you're on your own. You are not. Nothing is a surprise to God. They're always God's opportunities. But first God calls us to come into his presence with thanksgiving. God wants us to rejoice in his presence. God says when we enthrone him, he's enthroned in the praises of his people. And so when we praise God and we worship him, we know it, don't we? We bring his presence to bear in the situation. And deliverance is immediately at hand because we've got the presence of God right into the situation. It also takes our mind off what's happening. We get our focus. We enthrone Jesus right in the centre of our hearts. And whatever is against us, which was on the throne, is knocked off. And God is seated in his rightful place. And his presence comes down. And we've got his attention. And he knows why we're there. Esther blessed her enemy. And in Proverbs chapter 25, verses 21 and 22, let's have a look at those. Proverbs 25 and verse 21. If your enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he be thirsty, give him water to drink. For so doing, you will heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord will reward you. That's what happened to Esther. She blessed her enemies and God rewarded her, but not in the way Haman wanted it. So after Esther had feasted with the king and blessed her enemy, she invited Haman too and she blessed him at the feast. While they were drinking wine, the king said to Esther, what is your petition? It shall be granted you, and what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom it shall be fulfilled. Then Esther said, this is my petition and request. If I've won the king's favour, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfil my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet that I will prepare for them. And then I will do as the king has said. So again, she repeated the feast and continued to bless, continued to praise and worship. She wasn't in any hurry to expose Haman. She was waiting for God. She'd heard God and she knew God was preparing the ground. Verse 9, Haman went out happy that day and in good spirits. But when he saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and observed that he neither rose nor trembled before him. He was infuriated with Mordecai. I think that's lovely. If you want to get the devil mad, refuse to bow down to him. You'll get him so annoyed that he'll fall into his own trap. Chapter 6 is a wonderful chapter because it talks about the king couldn't sleep. And so he sent for the book of records, the annals, to be read to him. And in the annals it was found how Mordecai had told about Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, who'd guarded the threshold and who had conspired to assassinate the king. Then the king said, "What honour or distinction has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" The king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing's been done for him." The king said, "Who's in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hanged on the gallows that he'd prepared for him. So the king's servants told him, "Haman's standing in the court." The king said, "Let Haman come in." And the king said to Haman, "What should be done for the man whom the king wishes to honour?" Now Haman was so full of pride, he thought, the king couldn't possibly want to honour anybody but me. I think this is brilliant. Talk about looking idiot. So Haman said to the king, "Let the royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse that the king has ridden, with a royal crown on its head. And let the robes and the horse be handed over to the king's most noble officials. And let him robe the man whom the king wishes to honour. And let him conduct the man on horseback through the open square of the city, proclaiming before him, 'Thus shall it be done for the man whom the king wishes to honour.'" Then the king said to Haman, "Quickly, take the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so to the Jew Mordecai, whom you have mentioned." So, this stupid idiot, he'd fallen into his own trap, had he not? The very thing that he wanted to happen to him, and to look so good, he had to bestow on Mordecai, and he was so belittled and so humiliated as he was the man who had to lead Mordecai around the city square proclaiming, "Thus shall it be done for the man whom the king wishes to honour." You know, God will never allow the devil to succeed against us. Any trap the devil sets for you, and it's good for us to learn this as at your age. I wish I'd have known this when I was young. But in Proverbs 26 and verse 27, in the Amplified, Proverbs 26:27, it says, "Whoever digs a pit for another man's feet shall fall into it himself. And he who rolls a stone up a height to do mischief, it will return upon him." I think Helen's having a chuckle at this one. So that's exactly, God's law was set in motion. And you can't stop God's laws. If you fall foul of them, get on the wrong side, and believe you me, you'll come a cropper. But if we allow God, if we put God first, put him on the throne of our hearts, if we worship him, bring our requests before him, bless our enemies, don't try to get your own back. If you decide that you're going to get your own back against somebody who has done you down, it will not succeed. You'll fail and you'll end up in a mess. Please, 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 every one of us, if somebody sets you up, God has a way of dealing with it, and his way is best. Just keep looking at God, keep worshipping God, keep full of God. Just keep him in your focus, because he has your interests at heart. and he will do whatever needs to be done. It will be his way, his time, and it might not look like it's going your way. It didn't very much look like it was going Mordecai's way, because there was still this death wish hung over them, and it seemed like it could never be revoked. But God first humiliated Haman, and he exalted Mordecai. It says in chapter 6 and verse 12, then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his advisers and his wife said to him, if Mordecai, before whom your downfall has begun, is of the Jewish people, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. We're just as blessed and more so than the Jews. And if the devil, any plot set against you, will not succeed. In Isaiah chapter 50, no weapon formed against you, I can't remember, is it 59? No weapon formed against you will prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against you in judgment, you shall show to be in the wrong. This peace, this righteousness, this security, this triumph over opposition is the heritage of the Lord, and their vindication is of me, saith the Lord. God will vindicate you. What was it, love? 54:17, Isaiah 54 verse 17, that is. And in chapter 6, go to verse 14. While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman off to the banquet that Esther had prepared. So the king and Haman went into the feast with Queen Esther. On the second day, as they were drinking wine, the king said to Esther, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to half of my kingdom it shall be fulfilled. Then Queen Esther answered, if I have won your favour, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me. That is my petition. And the lives of my people, that is my request. For we've been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed and to be annihilated. If we'd been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have held my peace, but no enemy can compensate for this damage to the king. Then King Ahasuerus said to the queen, who is he and where is he who has presumed to do this? Esther said, a foe and enemy, this wicked Haman. Then Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. The king rose from the feast in wrath and went into the palace garden, but Haman stayed to beg his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that the king had determined to destroy him. When the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman had thrown himself on the couch where Esther was reclining. Goodness me, he's digging himself in deeper. And the king said, will he even assault the queen in my presence, in my own house? As the word left the mouth of the king, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance on the king, said, look, the very gallows that Haman has prepared for Mordecai, whose word saved the king, stands at Haman's house, 50 cubits high. And the king said, hang him on that. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he'd prepared for Mordecai. Then the anger of the king abated. I just think it's a stunning, stunning story. And I don't think it's just a story. That really happened. And we can learn so much from that. Don't ever let the devil get you worried or fretting or anxious or thinking you're a victim of circumstances. Don't bow down to him. Just don't do it. God has a plan to deliver you. God has a plan to raise you up. God has a plan to fulfill your destiny. Don't try and take the shortcut. Don't try and do it yourself. Don't try to vindicate yourself. Don't just bless your enemies. Be good to them. Talk nicely to them. And let God do the rest. He will bring justice. And he will vindicate his people. You know, when you're praising God, we've been doing the Lord's Prayer. And when you go into God's presence, as Esther did, to feast with the king. You know, if you want to feast with the Father in prayer, then go through the names of God at the beginning. It'll tell you all that God is to you. He's Jehovah Sikenu, he's our righteousness. He's Jehovah Makedesh, he's our sanctification. He's Jehovah Shalom, he's our peace. He's Jehovah Shema, he's always there. He'll never leave you, he'll never forsake you. He's Jehovah Rophe, the God who heals. He's our healer. He's Jehovah Jireh, our provider. He's Jehovah Nisai, he's our banner in battle. And he's Jehovah Rohi, our shepherd who leads us beside still waters and in green pastures. He restores our soul. He leads us in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He'll deliver us from all evil. No weapon ever formed against us will prosper. We can rejoice, we can whoosh, we can shout, we can holler, we can worship. We should never be anxious or afraid of any situation that comes against us. God will always turn our curses into blessings. He'll always promote you if you put him first. He will be your provider. He will bring you out in victory. There's a lovely verse in Psalm 46 and verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Don't run for refuge to the devil, because he'll slit your throat. Run to God and he'll give you victory every time. Be patient and wait for him. It may not seem it's going your way. It may seem the devil's winning. But ultimately you win. I promise you, you'll win. Praise God.